What's the reaction been like?
I don't know whether or not I was just being a bit of a skeptic, but I thought that it would be, I thought it would be a little harsher than it has been. No doubt there are certainly people who are not welcoming the news, and I understand that. Everyone's going to have an opinion, and I need to prove what's possible. But by and large, it's been really warm.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about the negative reaction, but I thought we'll leave it for a couple of minutes before we get to it. You must have had some amazing compliments and you know, congratulations from people around the world, some high profile leaders. Can you let us know who's been in touch?
Yeah, well, actually, the contact I've had from Australia, different members, has been really interesting. So, a minister in the Australian government who's you know, had kids in office, and the leader of the Labor Party in Tasmania, people with personal experiences who wanted to reach out at a personal level. So that's been lovely. Also, Theresa May, Bill Shorten, Malcolm Turnbull. I saw that Justin Trudeau sent a tweet. It's obviously reached beyond New Zealand shores. Of course, my interest is just doing my job here, but it's certainly lovely to receive those messages.
Is that weird? Because for most young people, when they announce that they're pregnant and, you know, there's a baby on the horizon, it's sort of just your close friends and your parents who are excited, but you have Justin Trudeau excited. Is that weird?
Well, it's hard to know how much excitement is behind a 140 characters, if you really know. But, yeah, I think in part that was one of the things that I know Clark in particular felt quite strongly about, was us trying to keep it to ourselves for a little while, so that it could feel a little bit more normal, because it is a bit surreal. It's not necessarily that normal when you step outside of your house to have people yell from their car window as they drive by. Nice things.
Yeah. I think that, you know, to say that it's not normal is an understatement. Do you worry about the lack of privacy?
No, because you know, that's something I've gone into with eyes wide open, and over time gradually gotten used to in the time I've been in politics. It doesn't happen to you overnight. It's a gradual build for the future, for our future child. I'm mindful that I made the choice to be in politics. Clark made a choice to put up with it. But beyond that, we've got a bit of a responsibility to try and do what we can to give a little bit of privacy, I guess, beyond ourselves, you know, as far as that's possible.
Yeah. Have you thought about perhaps talking to the media, striking a deal where you do set boundaries in place? Because, I mean, obviously one of the concerns will be that, you know, there is an intrusion in your lives, that the baby is papped just doing, you know, Clark is out at the playground with the baby and there are photos of that. Have you thought about setting boundaries with the media around that kind of thing?
Oh, look, you know, that's something that I'd hope we'd be able to establish. By and large, New Zealand's pretty good. You know, you see the odd example, and you do see pushback when that happens, because I think there is an expectation New Zealand wants to be a bit different in that regard. And so, by and large, my experience has been pretty good.
I mean, are you saying pretty much that us, members of the public, will regulate what the media does? So if we see intrusions in your private life that we think are out of step or out of line, that we will step in on your behalf. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, I think we have to try and, you know, we have to do our bit to try and, you know, set out some boundaries. And you can do that a little bit by saying what you will and won't do. And, you know, me and Clark and I, for instance, haven't tended to do joint photos together and things like that, because we're for women's mags, because that was just something we decided. People snap us at events, we get that, that's fine. But beyond that, so you can, you know, try and set those parameters yourself. But I have noticed the New Zealand public does tend to jump in when they see people being photographed when they've tried to set out their own preferences for their kids. And I think it's good when you see that public response, because actually we don't need to be like that. I think that's a positive thing.
Mm. Okay, so let's get to the reaction. So it has been a bit of a mixed bag. Some of it has been very positive, and there has been a bit of negative stuff. Yep. On the positive stuff, there's a lot of talk about the fact that this is sort of, you know, you are at the vanguard of something. You are a woman having a baby while holding down an enormously high-pressure job. And so there's a lot of I guess you've been set up as a role model. Do you think that that's okay? Are you okay with that, or do you think we're making too much of it?
Oh, look, I mean, I can see why it's happened, and in part that's actually more of a flow on from the fact that there aren't a lot of women in these positions globally. So that's probably the precursor for it being interesting. You know, when I was at ASEAN and APEC, you know, there were three female leaders in those meetings, and for the Commonwealth heads of government, again, a handful. So that's probably what, in the first place, makes it of interest. There just aren't women, by and large, doing that role, fulfilling that role. And then second to that, there's not so many who are in that age bracket. So I understand that you therefore are put up as being at the vanguard. But that's probably more because of women in leadership more than anything else. And I think everyone acknowledges that's something that we could do much more work on.
Okay, so you say it's more about pretty much the mum than the baby. But still, regardless, I mean, it's a unique situation. This is a significant thing that is happening. Do you acknowledge its significance? I mean, are you aware of how important this is for some women?
Yes, I do. I do. That doesn't stop me. I do, and I did think about that at the time a lot. But my immediate reaction as well was, well, that's probably because I'm also in a public role and there are people in high-pressure jobs. Or indeed, I hasten to say, women who do this on their own and men who do it on their own, who won't have the level of support that I will have, who I think probably we don't spend enough time thinking about actually, whilst they're not as rare as this situation, is equally as hard. And so I do accept it, but I do want to raise the flag on behalf of those individuals who do it every day too.
No, fair enough. So on the negative reaction, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about this being an irresponsible move, is how some people see it. Irresponsible to take as high a profile job as this and as important a job as this, and then to be, for want of a better word, distracted by a pregnancy. How do you react to that?
Yeah, look, people will have that opinion, and my job isn't to change their mind. Obviously, we take a different view. What I do see as my job, though, is to prove to them that I will focus on making sure that I fulfil the commitment that I have. Yes, I've said I'll take 6 weeks. I've got to make sure that I'm healthy enough to come back into the workplace and give it everything as well. But that I'll only be able to do by demonstrating it and by doing the job. I think that the flip side of that sentiment that people might have, I can see they might have a question mark over the timing, and I've given a little bit of the personal reasons around why we were surprised at this timing as well. But generally, if there's a general sentiment that this job can't be done whilst having children, then that is saying to women in a role like mine, you have to make a choice. And if you go into a role like this, you cannot have a family. That's a matter I think we should be having that public debate on. I would hope that we've moved beyond saying women have to make those trade-offs, that they have to look back on their career with perhaps, you know, a view that they had to make that choice. And that's another conversation.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about the timing. I have a couple of texts to read you on that. One of them says, we were duped by the Prime Minister as she knew she was pregnant. And a second one from Andy says, perhaps Jacinda let Winston know she was pregnant and used it as negotiating leverage.
No.
Any truth in that?
No. On that last one, Mr. Peters knew on Thursday. I announced on Friday. He, of course, knew the hypothetical that I may have a family. But everybody knew that, and it was a hypothetical because, you know, particularly given my situation where I'd had some advice that I might struggle, it felt very hypothetical to me. In terms of duping the public, you know, obviously the election had been had again. I'd always been open about my desire to have a family. And you know, maybe some people didn't catch that, but I'd always, including when I was questioned by a broadcaster about my plans, said I've always been happy to answer that question and be open about it because some people may have a view. I defend other women's right in the workplace not to answer that question, but my own, I've always been transparent. So, I would hope no one would feel duped. And, of course, I didn't know until after the election as well.
Hey, I have got some questions that, you know, have been just weighing on my mind.
Yeah.
And this is just the practical stuff, right? So have you thought after 6 weeks, what are you going to do if you need to go down to Invercargill? Does the baby have to come with you?
So my hope of what I'll try and do is tend to do day visits as much as I can. Mm. It's when you overnight that it becomes a lot more problematic. You know, I don't know how much your listeners want to hear about plans around juggling things like breastfeeding, but it's something I've certainly put a bit of thought into how I'll manage that. And the general rule of thumb will be, you know, try and go down, do those visits, do spend that time in those areas within a day. And ease back in, of course, further down the track to my other routine that I used to have of spending a bit more time beyond that.
And what about antenatal classes? Imagine if you were sitting in an antenatal class and the Prime Minister turned up to hold her plastic baby. Are you going to do that?
Well, Clark and I have talked a little bit about that, and I've asked whether I can send him.
By himself?
Yes. and we haven't quite finalised that. That is fair. That will be one of the things I'll struggle to find the time to do because our schedules are a little bit odd in Parliament.
I mean, to be fair, you are the Prime Minister. You could probably get an antenatal class brought to you, you know.
Do you know, I think the amount of advice we're getting at the moment probably constitutes an antenatal class.
I was going to say, and what about presents? If somebody is dying to send you baby presents, what is the one thing you do not need?
Oh, look, I'd say, do you know, one of our hopes is to just reuse and recycle lots of family and friends in our lives who have already offered up bits and pieces. And so, yeah, I mean, just, I often think about this. It's those who are often in the most privileged position who receive the most, and those who have the least receive the least. And so, you know, if that is so lovely, but if someone really, really wants to, send me a note saying that on our behalf you sent an outfit to a local organisation who supports low-income families in the community. That I would love.
Oh, yeah, that's a really nice idea. I wanted to ask you, I mean, goodness, you know, this is your life now, Prime Minister. You just spent, I don't even know how long, 10 minutes with me talking about your baby. You're going to be forgotten. This always happens to the mother. How was your summer?
Oh, it looked fantastic, yeah. And lots of time with family, just doing normal things. Spent a lot of time with nieces and nephews. It was just very, very normal summer in Gisborne, a little bit of time in Australia, and it was great.
Did you have to have the DPS with you?
No, I always had this assumption that they went everywhere, but no, when we spent 6 days in Australia and they left us to it. So, you know, they're great, but it was good to be released for a little bit.
Yep. Yeah. I was under the impression that they travelled around with you as well everywhere, so I'm pleased to hear it's not the case. Obviously, you know, given that this is a Wellington show, I think we should talk a little bit about the capital. Your predecessor plus one, I suppose we'll skip Bill English there, but John Key said at one stage, of course, quite famously, that Wellington was a dying city. Things have turned around slightly since then. I think, you know, we could say that's probably not the case. What are your thoughts on Wellington's future?
Yeah, I carry the Arts, Culture and Heritage portfolio. So for a starting point, I certainly know they have a hugely vibrant, creative and arts community and sector. And I'd equally, you know, at the time, really questioned that sentiment from the then Prime Minister. You know, we spend, you know, a good chunk of our time down in Wellington. It struck me as being a hugely vibrant place. But as with all of our cities and our regions, we do need to play to our strengths and make sure that we're doing all we can to support some of those industries where there is really opportunity to grow the local economy, grow jobs. And Wellington's as much an example of that as anywhere.
So what does Wellington need support in growing?
Well, I think we've probably seen some examples, again, in the creative sector. Auckland's, for instance, film industry is fantastic, as is Wellington's. But we saw some examples where if we don't keep on top of making sure that we're agile around things like the incentives regime for the screen industry, then we can start lagging, and that has a knock-on effect for a whole range of industries that sit around it and support it. It's just one example of making sure that we keep playing to strength.
Now, it is very expensive to buy at the moment in Wellington. I just discovered this myself.
Yes.
It's expensive to rent, especially for students moving into the city ahead of the university starting. What do we do about it?
Oh, yeah, and I have a real genuine concern here. I know that our finance minister and local Wellington Central MP, Grant Robertson, I've been hearing reports at his office that particularly landlords who target the student base have just arbitrarily increased their rents. Not everyone, of course, but we're hearing a lot of anecdotal evidence around arbitrarily increasing their rents by $50 to just match this increase in student allowance. You know, look, you know, there is no doubt that there is a supply issue in Wellington. Council is doing what it can, and we will too. But there's something also to be said around making sure that the behaviour in some of those sectors is fair, because yeah, some stuff that I've heard seems pretty questionable to me.
I mean, look, the thing is, that shouldn't come as a surprise, though, should it? Because even before this happened, there were predictions that if you lift the allowance by $50, you will lift rents by $50. So isn't this in part the government's fault?
There are provisions in the law. If you had a continuous rental, that would really call into question whether you were able to do that. It's because someone takes a break out of a rental agreement, may go away for summer holidays, that advantage has been taken. So whether or not you're able to do it and should do it are two different things. But look, that couldn't stop us at least acknowledging that students were living on less than $200 a week to cover rent, food, all of their expenses. It just wasn't feasible for us to say that was okay. And because we were worried about potential behaviours from some landlords, that we weren't going to acknowledge that. We had to. And I would emphasise, not everyone's doing this. I don't want to demonise an entire sector, but it is something when you've got shortage of supply that we have a role to play in trying to help get on top of.
So what do we do about it? Do we just allow this to happen, or do we have means to be able to stop it?
Yeah, and that's something that we're having. First, we want to make sure if it, you know, go beyond the anecdotal, because as I say, we're hearing lots of reports. We want to see how wide scale it's happening and get a bit of a handle on it. Some of the things we can do are a bit longer term. We're looking at our short-term response, but of course, we've always had an ambition around what we can do to increase housing supply, because that's ultimately the fix.
Mm. I want to get to that, but you know, this does bring me to a point about the government's priorities. I think sometimes I've personally got the feeling in the last few months that sometimes the Labor government's priorities are a bit out of whack, and this is an example of it, where Grant Robertson, our finance minister, says, "Listen, guys, to the students, if you see that your landlord is putting up your rent by $50, it looks a bit dodgy. Get in touch with my office." I mean, surely the finance minister has more important things to do than deal with individual students.
No, because he's the MPP. We never will have anything more important to do than making sure that we're in contact with our electorate. You know, I'm the Prime Minister and I'm also the MP for Mount Albert. I still have people coming through our door with local issues, and that's important. That's the way our democracy works. We will both be ministers and local MPs, so we should never diminish people's right and ability to do that. And in part, that helps us keep in touch with what's happening on the ground as well. So I don't see that as us not having our eye on the priorities, just making sure we're doing a good job locally and serving our local constituents. And you never want a scenario where people are more poorly served just because you happen to be elevated towards being a minister or another role like that. Yes, we've always got to manage our workload, absolutely, but we have good support to do that locally too.
Okay, part of the problem is obviously the fact that there are anecdotally some unscrupulous landlords, but a large part of the problem is the shortage of houses that we have and apartments in the city. If the Wellington City Council came to central government and said, we are prepared to build, if you will support us financially, would you guys consider it?
Oh, and part of the work that we're doing at the moment is where those partnership opportunities arise, and that's some of the work that Phil Twice is doing. You can see, for instance, there's already some support given to Wellington Council to try and increase the provision of social housing that they have. So that's not new, that partnership between the two of us. For us, it's about how we can do more of it, particularly in those areas of short supply, Wellington, Auckland, Tauranga. We need land, and so that's an area where there needs to be a lot of collaboration.
And if Wellington City Council did get your support to build these places, what kind of things are we looking at? Are we looking at sort of council housing blocks, or are we looking at things that are going to fit into the city a little bit better than that?
Oh, so I mean, in terms of these partnerships that we're looking for more broadly, some of which are the private sector, some will be with iwi, some will be just seeing what we can do alongside council. Really, it depends on the mix of need that exists in different areas, making sure we're meeting that. As Housing New Zealand has found, the makeup of families, the number of bedrooms people seek, all of that's changing. What I would say, one of the areas where in the past councils have been really good has been in the provision of pensioner housing. We've lost a lot of that. We run the risk of if our older population are unable to find affordable accommodation, we'll end up having poverty amongst our elder population in a way that we haven't, that we've managed to, till now, really improve the numbers on. So that's an area I think we need to be particularly mindful of.
So Prime Minister, since, goodness, I don't want to overstate it, but it feels like at least 2010 we've been complaining about house prices and rent prices, if not before that. It's 2018, how much longer are we going to be complaining about this? How much longer before we actually see something tangible done and rents come down and house prices just stabilise a little bit?
Yeah, and that's a fair question, because no one's ever argued this would be simple. I think probably for us it's about making sure that you pull in the mix of things that will start to see change. You know, for us it was never about one thing. It's about both having a building program. It's about making sure that you're looking at your tax system, both how it incentivizes and disincentivizes investment in the non-productive part of the economy, housing rather than in business. It means looking at what's happening with our planning, whether it's easy enough to get consents. There's a whole range of things that we need to look at, foreign buyers, the whole mix. And so we've tried to do things across the board. Some will have a lag. But for me, what I'm going to be looking at in a year's time is, are we managing to deal with some of the homelessness we're seeing as a result? Because that's the chronic measure of when we're failing on housing. There are longer-term measures we need to keep an eye on, but that'll be in the short term one of the things that I'll be wanting to look at.
All right, very quickly, if you could predict what Wellington will look like in 50 years, in the Wellington that you'd like to see, and is achievable as well, what would it be?
Oh, look, I mean, if you're looking for kind of a sentiment, yeah, it already has the seeds of it now. It's an innovative, funky city that's really creative. It's an active kind of community around the university, fantastic little boutique industries as well. It's just more of that, making sure that they're resilient as well as a city. But it's going to be one of those cities we're proud of, I think.
Hmm. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about women's issues, because I think that this is a thing that is, it seems to be sort of, you know, on everybody's minds at the moment. We've talked about the Me Too movement online. We've talked about Harvey Weinstein. Even your pregnancy fits into this wider awareness of what women can do and what women can expect. Do you think that is it being all conflated, and is it all just being jumbled together and not actually a real movement? Or do you think something is happening for women right now?
I think, you know, that I think there are every individual strand of those movements are absolutely legitimate. And in part, I think probably is the acknowledgement that we can't be complacent around things that we thought we've made progress on. And there's really something to that. And also that we can't be silent and make an assumption that something's only happening to one person in one corner of an industry. So it's giving voice to that.
I mean, this is going to sound like I might be taking the mickey, and I'm really not. But even the woman at Rhythm and Vines with the glitter on her boobs who was sexually assaulted, even that fits into this, doesn't it?
Well, look, I mean, yeah, you want to see, you know, I mean, what I wanted to see was a bit of a public response that said, yeah, I mean, that was rough behaviour, what was going on there, rather than some people who seem to attack or critique the woman, you know. And I think that, again, speaks to that wider sense of just making sure that we have respect for people no matter where they are, no matter what the environment.
Do you think a woman should be allowed to walk around at a music festival with her boobs out and glitter painted on them?
I think the question is, do we think it's ever acceptable for a woman, no matter what, to be grabbed in the manner that they were?
Well, that was going to be my second question. But yeah. Often when I talk to people about it, the first question that I face is it acceptable for a woman to do that? So is it acceptable for a woman to do that?
I will never ever accept an argument that says that this is about the woman's behaviour creating someone else's bad behaviour. I think that's what that implies. The question should always be, is it acceptable, no matter what the circumstances, for someone to react in that way? And the answer is no.
Would you
no matter what.
Would you have hit him if he'd done that to you?
Do you know, I wonder whether whether or not that's almost like you have an instant response. Your instant response when anyone's grabbed in that way is to protect yourself or to have this. I'm not surprised that someone would have an instantaneous reaction like that. I tend to be someone who probably lectures, so I probably wag my finger.
Oh, well, you've done that before, actually. With Mark Richardson,
right,
didn't we?
Form. Different circumstances, I do have form.
Well, for the record, I would hit him, and I'd be very proud if the Prime Minister hit him as well. I think he deserved every thumping he got. But on the whole, I do not condone assault of any kind. Just in this particular case, it's okay. About child poverty, which is something that you have made kind of your personal project, there is still some reluctance among some to accept that there is child poverty in New Zealand. How can we be sure that there is child poverty? How do we know?
We know because there's an international measure for it. So, and that international measure tells us, relative to other countries, what poverty looks like in New Zealand. So we use a set of measures that OECD use, that UNICEF use. They're applied internationally. We apply them here. That tells us what our relative poverty looks like.
Do you think that we've kind of overstated it by calling it child poverty? Because poverty elicits these images of, you know, starving kids in Africa, and you don't see that in New Zealand. I mean, isn't that part of the problem in trying to get people to accept it, is that poverty is such a big word?
I think the point here is that poverty will be relative. And I think sometimes you do have that discussion of people saying, well, we're not Africa, and we're not. But we have an expectation of what someone's experience growing up or living should be, particularly as a developed nation. Because if you just had a measure of poverty that was simply the measure for the third world, of course no one in the developed world would ever consider to be, well, in countries like ours, would be considered to be living in poverty. But we know what's an acceptable standard based against what the majority of New Zealanders are experiencing and should expect. We would hope, for instance, that, you know, that every child growing up in New Zealand has access to a warm, dry home, that has decent food on the table, that has the ability to wear shoes to school. We have that expectation, and that's what these poverty measures capture.
Mm. Before we let you go, we should probably deal with some international stuff. How are you going to handle Donald Trump this year?
Same way I have in the past. He's a representative of a nation that New Zealand has a long-standing relationship with. It's in New Zealand's best interest that we maintain that relationship and that we make sure that we represent New Zealand's interest in the process.
So it's sort of like being diplomatic but not condoning his bad behaviour.
Oh, look, people will know my views on lots of elements of what's going on in the United States, but ultimately it's my job to represent New Zealand's interest.
And what's going to happen with North Korea? How do you see this thing playing out?
On that situation, on the intensity of that, we will always advocate for communication, for us to use channels like sanctions, and we have advocated and tried to make sure that they were utilised in our region to best effect. We are the nation that stood up against nuclear proliferation. We continue to do so, and so I think we can really hold our heads high when we argue for that.
I know there's been some talk about Winston Peters going to Pyongyang to go and sort this out. Is that realistic? Are we really going to do that?
That's not something that we're looking at right now, but you know, he has played a role there before. Condoleezza Rice did ask him to play a specific role in communicating with North Korea in the past. Never underestimate the role and the experience Winston Peters has in an international environment. I've seen it myself firsthand. There's a huge amount of respect there for him.
On Australia, those guys got pretty upset with you and the Labor government over how, I guess, let's just cut to the chase. You embarrassed them about the refugees, the Manus Island refugees, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but they were cross with us. How are you going to deal with that? How are you going to warm them up?
I don't think that's required. I mean, yeah, we both took a view on the issue. You know, when you've got a strength of relationship like we have, we're able to communicate with one another on that. From my perspective, it's had no effect. Malcolm Turnbull called me without any prompting, I should add. There was absolutely no forewarning of the Australian Prime Minister that I was having a baby, but he was one of the first calls I got, which was lovely.
Well, how did he find out, Jacinda Ardern? How did he find out?
obviously someone in his office or social media, but I can assure you, last thing on my mind was somehow that we needed to inform our international partners or something like that. I don't imagine they'd be particularly interested to hear it, but nonetheless, he called me, which was lovely. And we've, in March, have our Trans-Tasman exchange, which again, looking forward to. I really push back on this idea that these our relationship is anything but solid.
And finally, any resolutions for 2018?
What was that? Any resolutions for 2018?
Yeah.
Oh, I just think actually just getting through my to-do list will be all right. you know, we as a government had a 100-day plan that was really, really robust, you know, getting in stuck into things quickly. The next stage for us is, what does that look like for the rest of the year? That's what we're here working through at the moment, making sure that the public can see us making real gains on those things that matter, housing, health, education, and they can see where all our efforts have gone into and why.
Prime Minister, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for yours.